today, the major parties deserve to perish. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news. I'm joined by Robbie Barwick from the Citizens Party. Hi, Robbie. Nice to see you back. How are you going?
Very good, Martin. Nice to be back. And maybe we should get out of the way first that this is sort of a preliminary announcement. We won't be the Citizens Party forever. We're metamorphosizing. How do you even say that word? I always stumble over that. Metamorphizing into a bigger party, and we'll announce a different name soon. But it's been good being the Citizens Party with you for the last 7 years or so.
Absolutely. Well, it's very interesting, and I'll be fascinated to see how the metamorphosis goes on. There is a really, really important opportunity, I think, for smaller parties, particularly to take over the heavy lifting from the major parties, who, to my mind, have wandered away from looking after Australians' interests, chasing a lot of, you know, large power players, and frankly, stuffing up left, right, and centre. So it's no surprise that people are looking for alternatives. So valid alternatives are really important.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you and I have been talking about just the lack of representation for real Australians in the major parties for a long time. We've been fighting very hard to get issues addressed in Parliament that relate to the real world, the real people, the real economy. And you know, you can advance policies and these issues, discussions of issues so far, and you can get agreement from individuals, but they always eventually hit a brick wall because these major parties are institutionalized to the point where they don't know how they're facing the greatest threat of their existence. Right, we're just going by the polls, and it's been tested in, you know, a couple of elections now, but this is unprecedented. The collapse in support for the major parties, we've never seen it before in Australia, and of course that's going to One Nation, and in the face of their facing the end of their very existence, they seem to be, and I want to give a real strong example of it. They seem to be incapable of changing to survive, and that's why I say I think they're institutionalized, right? They've been in this bubble for so long. Anthony Albanese has this term that when I first started hearing him using it, I was so disgusted. He likes to use it. He says this term is parties of government. It's as if he was saying, now this is a Labor, supposedly a Labor hard left man. The guy who started crying in 2009 or 10 or whatever it was with the Rudd-Gillard fight, and he goes, I just want to fight Tories, right? So presumably the Tories, Martin, are his enemies. Yet when he says parties of government, he's saying we, Labor, and you, the Liberals, we are the ordained from on high parties of government, right? There's some special dispensation. The divine right of the Australian version of the divine right of kings, right, was in his mind is bestowed on these two parties. He's such a believer in this. He visited the UK last year and gave a speech to Keir Starmer's shindig, Labor Party shindig, and used the term there, right, saying we are the parties of government. Now, didn't help Keir Starmer, obviously. we're about to hear the news about what he's going to do, and it certainly hasn't helped Albanese, but they're so they this is like the stuff they've fed back to each other, right? That they've used to console each other that why they don't have to serve the people on some really fundamental issues, why they're very hard to break through on, and now the public have absolutely deserted them, and they're bunnies in the headlight, or because we're Australia, we'll say they're kangaroos in the headlight.
Well, and just going back to the UK briefly, it is fascinating to see what's going on there, because in the last few elections, mostly minor elections, you know, at the local level, the major parties got absolutely trounced. And then we had Andy Burnham standing ex-mayor, or yeah, now ex-mayor of Manchester, standing for something different, but actually sounding remarkably like the same. And yet people were actually voting for him to get him to get Starmer out of office. So I think that one of the things I'm seeing is a lot of people are now voting against something rather than for something. And I'd argue that in Australia, the one nation vote is predominantly a plague on both your houses. You've stuffed us up madly, and we just want something different. And it's almost not a question of, well, what is that different thing? It's about breaking what is currently not working. Now, I'm a bit concerned about that philosophy because, of course, if you actually create a vacuum, you need to be rather careful about what it is that you're actually going to see coming in to fill that vacuum. And if you have a party with, well, somewhat limited policies and policies perhaps which might be regarded by some as rather extreme, be careful what you wish for. So I think at this critical point, Robbie, it's not just a question about highlighting the major parties' deficiencies and the fact that they've really not looked after Australia or Australians for the last 20 to 30 years, neoliberalism part of the story, but what's going to replace it? What is that next step that we're going to do to bring us back to a path that will actually create more prosperity for ordinary people and better government? That's the critical question. And I don't think that that is the question that really is being explored now.
Well, so the party that we're going to expand with is Jared Rennick's People First Party. And Jared has started formulating that the idea that One Nation is now a major party, and major parties will attract vested interests who will try and influence them, because it's all about raw power with these guys, right? The rich and powerful want it. They're that way for a reason, Martin. They find ways to influence things using their wealth. And you can see that process happening with One Nation. Now, we're supposed to take their word for it, that they're everything that the public want them to be. Maybe we can come back to that, because there's a few specifics we can talk about. But Jared's argument is that even if people put their hope in this new phenomenon of One Nation, because it's now a major party, you still need a party like us to hold them to account, right? To be that voice for actual policy solutions to hold them to account. And the example I want to give about how the major parties deserve to perish is the coalition, right? The Liberal National Party. And it's in relation to that issue that we talked about at the time back in March on cash. Because cash is an issue that is actually quite a popular issue. People respond to it. So if the major parties, and especially the coalition, the Liberals and Nationals, and the Nationals are going extinct faster than the Liberals, if they want to claw back support, they've got to do the one thing that they seem to be incapable of doing, which is actually serving the people, showing the people, hey, we're going to serve you at all costs. And you can see how they're incapable of doing it in this issue to do with cash. So back in March, there was a disallowance motion in the Senate to disallow Jim Chalmers' cash acceptance mandate regulations, which had come into effect on the 1st of January. So Senator Roberts of One Nation had put up the disallowance motion, but he did that. That was an issue that we had worked with him on, right? And he did that at our request. And so our party did all the campaigning, and I'm appreciative of the fact that Senator Roberts did it, but I can tell you their party did nothing to build the votes for it. We did it. I got a call from them the Friday night before it was going to be voted on Tuesday, and they said, "Do you have, what are the votes on this cash disallowance motion?" And I said, "Well, haven't we've been doing some other things?" And they said, "Well, what have you done?" They hadn't done anything. So we mobilised on the Monday and the Tuesday, and by the Tuesday night we flooded Parliament with so many calls and emails that we got all the parties except for the Labor Party to agree to back this disallowance motion. And the whole point of the disallowance motion was to say, this is not a proper mandate. You've come up with a mandate for cash acceptance to supposedly save cash use in Australia, but you've come up with a mandate that exempts 99% of all businesses. Right. And the ones that are not exempted, which is supermarkets and fuel retailers, they can still apply for an exemption if there's no banks close by. And Dale Webster, the independent journalist who covers this the best, she reported the other week that what's happening, the fuel retailers and supermarkets are applying for exemptions, right? So their argument was this is actually going to undermine cash use, not save it. We need to force Jim Chalmers, we need to just reject this mandate, send Jim Chalmers back to the drawing board to come up with a proper one. And everyone on the, except for Labor in the Senate, signed on to that. They expressed it. And there was a vote on the, there was a debate on the Tuesday night where One Nation said their piece, Independents said their piece, and the Liberals got up, Slade Brockman, the Liberal senator, and said, "We are going to support this motion because cash is too important." And then you remember, Martin, there was these shenanigans where the Labor side essentially filibustered, right, so they could stop it going to a vote that night. Because if it went to a vote that night, we would have won. So they stopped it going to a vote that night. When it came back a week later, suddenly the coalition gets up and they had backflipped. And they said, no, we're voting against the disallowance motion. We're voting to keep the cash mandate. Now, Matt Canavan, I had a certain hope for Matt Canavan when he became the leader of the National Party because the Nationals turned to him in desperation. He was the guy they hoped would win back votes that they were losing to One Nation, and Matt was a bit out of the box. But Matt sent, I was in communication with lots of MPs, and his response to me was for the backflip. He said, "We can't throw the baby out with the bathwater." And I want you to think about that because that is such a typical expression for the way these major parties have always operated, right? They will rationalize sticking with their schemes that ultimately serve the big end of town. Because what's the issue with cash? Who wants to get rid of it? The banks. That's always been the issue. They get rid of cash, everything has to go through their computers. That's the bottom line, right? And so they're the ones that have undermined cash. And the way they've undermined is by closing branches everywhere and making cash hard to get. And that's insane in a country like Australia. And here's an opportunity to just slap them in the face and slap the government in the face and say, no, you're not going to come up with a scam and a sham policy like this. Go back to the drawing board. After agreeing that that was the right thing to do a week earlier, because it was so important, they said. Then there was a backflip. Now, Senator Nick McKim from the Greens got up and he asked the right question. He said, "Who bought you off?" And of course, there was great indignation, squeals of indignation in the Senate when he said it. But that was the bottom line: who bought them off, right? But anyway, so Michaelia Cash gets up in the Senate, announces that no, they're going to stick with the government's mandate. She put on this show of sympathy for the elderly, and we made fun of this in a video, and you can insert it if you want, Martin. But I called her Mrs. Lovejoy Act. Won't anybody think of the children? And then she will say, "Won't anybody think of the elderly who want to use cash?" Yeah, we were thinking of them because we want to force the governments back to the drawing board so they actually put the heat on the banks and say, "You are going to stop undermining cash. You're going to keep your branches open. In fact, you're going to reopen some branches. Just really muscle up to them." That's what our policy was. And these guys were coming up with this fake narrative to justify actually selling out to them, right? But then they promised this, and this is the part that has really got to me. They said, the National Party and Liberal Party said, "Yes, we know it's a crap mandate. We know it's pathetic. So what we're going to do, even though we're going to vote for it, we're going to put up a private member's bill to make it stronger. That's what we're going to do." Now, Nick McKim called them out on that, and they said, "What a joke." He said, "You can come up with a bill, and if we'll look at it." And he said, "If it's a good one, we'll even vote for it. But then it's got to go to the lower house where the government has 94 members of parliament, a monster majority, and they're not going to pass it. It's just for show. What you'll suggest here, we have an opportunity to really put them under pressure by denying them their policy now because using the numbers in the Senate. And instead, you're going to go through the motions and just do it for show." And what a joke. Anyway, but that's what they said they'd do. Well, Martin, it's 3 months later. Where's the bill? There is no bill. And can I tell you, I'm sure there never was going to be a bill. Right? It's the sort of thing that these parties, and Labor's the same beast, the sort of thing they've always done so that they'll do something that is to side with the vested interests against the people, and then to placate the anger of the people, they'll promise some token thing, right? Most of the time it's a BS promise and they get away with it. Well, they always have got away with it until now, because now the public have snapped. The public has said, enough. We hate you guys. This is the kind of thing that has made the public hate them, right? While they play these kind of games so the banks keep getting their way, the same banks are the ones that get to make even bigger profits out of the misery of the people with mortgages in Australia who are paying, you know, on average are probably paying about double for their mortgage what they were paying, 5 years ago, right? That's what's crushed. That's the sort of thing that's crushing Australians. And, you know, when I'm looking at this behavior and I went and looked for every sign of a bill, no sign of a bill. I asked these senators, these coalition senators directly, where's the bill? They didn't answer. They usually answer me. They didn't answer me. That tells me there's no bill, right? And that's why, Martin, my conclusion is these major parties deserve what's happening to them. They deserve to perish, because in the face of this threat from the voters, unprecedented, if they cannot adapt and say, well, we've got to do the one thing that might win them back, which is actually serve people, they deserve to everything that's going to happen to them.
Yeah, and another example, I think, would be the relationship of Australia to the US and the positioning around the recent Middle East conflict and all of those things, which once again just shows that actually, you know, they weren't looking after the Australian interest. They were looking after that so-called relationship with the US and all of those defense issues. We see the same thing again and again and again, which is that the political system effectively makes decisions for a range of political reasons, but those decisions so often cut against the interests of ordinary Australians, ordinary households, ordinary businesses. And there's a systemic problem over the last 30 years, which means that over that time, real wages have gone backwards. The truth is that more and more people are in more and more financial stress, as I see in my modeling and in my surveys. And it's, you know, whether you're in the rental sector or whether you're actually with a mortgage. And interestingly, of course, what then happens is you have sort of pseudo discussions about migration. Oh, no, we've got to deal with migration or not, right? And then nothing happens. Or, no, we've got to deal with the cash issue and then nothing happens. And remember that regional banking inquiry from, what, more than 2 years ago? And all of those recommendations? Well, crickets. So what we've got is a political system that is designed to try and keep itself going, supporting the interests of major power blocks, whether they be, you know, large corporates or whether they be big political relationships. But they're missing the reason for them to exist in the first place, which is to provide a platform, an environment, for within which businesses and households in Australia can thrive. That is what the mandate should be, but that is not what the mandate is. Got to change.
It does have to change. And I think you've said that very well. And I remember for the nerds among your audience, go back to what's the very first shows that Martin and I did together. Because we actually talked about this neoliberalization and financialization of the Australian economy, which has left us drowning in debt as an economy, record government debt, national debt, household debt, etc. And of course, these are all the things that eventually add up to giving you a cost of living crisis. We've gone from having an economy that back in '66, which was the high watermark, it was 30% of our economy was manufacturing. By 1990, it was still 13%. It's now 5% of our economy is manufacturing. And when you have so little manufacturing, then you are completely dependent on imports for pretty much everything. And you don't have, you've undercut your skills to be able to do a lot of that. There's in a really good manufacturing economy, Martin, there's so much capability around just generally that a lot of things can get done as favors for different businesses and industries just really cheaply, right? Some guy, I remember years ago, one of our supporters was a wheat farmer in New South Wales, and he started harvesting, and he was telling me the story that the header broke on his harvester broke. So he remembered back in the day when he'd just go to his local town, and there'd be a machinist there who could machine him a part. That didn't exist anymore. So he had to go to the major center, which was much further away, to the actual the dealership for this kind of tractor brand. And they didn't have any of the parts there. They had to order it in. And so it was like 8 days to get it, right, from the United States. Now, so go from when it could be fixed in half a day because there's a local guy who could do the machining and make that part for him, to a knock-on effect that has a much bigger cost to him, not a financial cost. It's worse than a financial cost. It's a time cost. And then multiply that sort of thing by all the farmers in Australia in a similar experience and all sorts of other industries, et cetera. These are the things that get embedded into the actual real cost of living crisis. This is what happens when you don't have a productive economy, right? And it's all been dismantled. Now, I wanted to say that because we have, our party has done a lot to track who drove this neoliberal agenda that did this to us, that dismantled our economy, that dropped tariffs and just smashed all our manufacturing and drove it offshore, privatized all our industries to death. So we don't have our infrastructure, privatized our big infrastructure and services, et cetera. And just really undercut all the public assets that actually help to serve the people and give us our high living standard. And a lot of this came out of, you know, think tanks in the UK associated with Margaret Thatcher. There's a big global network of them called the Atlas Network, and Atlas based on Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged. And there's hundreds and hundreds of these think tanks that all sign onto this extreme neoliberal agenda. In Australia, it's the Centre for Independent Studies, the Institute of Public Affairs. And let me give you some names associated with it. The first name is Rupert Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch was a very big sponsor of the Centre for Independent Studies and the Institute of Public Affairs, a big campaigner for the neoliberalisation of Australia through his media. On Insiders on Sunday, Peter Harcher actually commented that one day in the 1980s, Paul Keating said to him that he had no support for what he was doing to our economy, the guy who started privatizing and deregulating everything, no support from the party, no support from the parliament, no support from the membership. He said, the only support I have is from the press gallery. Well, a lot of that was due to Rupert Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch deployed his media to actually back this to the hilt, just as he'd backed Margaret Thatcher. Now, Rupert Murdoch, remember, he's a truly great Australian, Rupert Murdoch. He's the guy who sold out his membership, his Australian citizenship, just so he could become an American citizen to make more money. Yet if anyone's familiar with his media, they pontificate all the time about who the true Australians are, right? It's disgusting hypocrisy. And the reason I'm highlighting him is because he is clearly now one of the big backers of One Nation. Clearly, the Murdoch media, Sky News, all the tabloids in all the cities, they are backing One Nation to the hilt. And when Pauline gave us in her speech in the press gallery last week, the press club last week, when she decided to attack the ABC and SBS of all things, people took it in different ways. I'll tell you what I thought straight away, that's Murdoch. That's the deal. It's as if there's a deal done with the guy. And I can tell you the history of Murdoch in Australia. He does do deals with political parties. He did a deal with Gough Whitlam in 1972 to back him for the election. He's done a deal with every single government ever since to back them for the election. He even did a deal with Kevin Rudd in 2007, and that later blew up in his face. There's photos of more recently of Albanese and Chris Minns from New South Wales walking down the street with Lachlan Murdoch, and Lachlan's in the middle and Elba and Chris Minns on either side. One's the Prime Minister of this country, one's the Premier of the biggest state in Australia, but the guy who is in charge is the guy in the middle, Lachlan Murdoch, right? That is a big part of the political dynamic in Australia, the power of this particular media organisation. And it seems to me, and I'm saying this because I think if you're going to put all your hopes in One Nation, you should be worried. You should be starting to look at this stuff and get worried, right? Because what it seems to me is while Pauline probably is certain that her views have always stayed the same, there are forces that are gravitating to her with a view to want to influence her, right? Because she is representing the balance of power shift in Australia. And of course, the other name is Gina Rinehart. Gina is the biggest funder of the Institute of Public Affairs, which is the other one of these neoliberal think tanks. And sorry, while these people are trying to influence Pauline Hanson, and yours truly over the years has tried to influence Pauline Hanson, I got her to introduce a bill into Parliament. I have got her to ask people. It was raised a little while ago how little she's appeared in Senate estimates. Yours truly, I'm one of the few people that's got her to ask a question in Senate estimates. I wrote it for her on bail-in, and I got her to ask it back in 2018, etc. But that's when she was, 5% in the polls, and these big Gina Rinehart was funding the Liberal Party. Rupert Murdoch was more interested in the Liberal Party. So this is not necessarily to condemn Pauline. What I'm warning you guys is that this plutocracy, Australia is not a real democracy. This, like America, would become a plutocracy where money thinks it rules. They are gravitating to one nation. And one test will be what Pauline says in response to what Gina said in Townsville, where she wants to give away Australian land to the country of Israel to build weapons. This is not an Australia First agenda. This is the opposite of one nation. It's by definition two nations, right? Pauline hasn't said boo about it. She has not come out and criticized and said to distance herself from Gina Rinehart, because I don't think she can. I think all the signs are they're in the tank. And so these are, I'm sorry to go on like this, but these are worrying signs. If you're someone who's put your hope on real change there, these are worrying signs. And that's why you got to think in terms of what are the policy solutions Australia needs. Our party, working with others like Gerard Rennick, highlight these issues to do with banks because, in a sense, economically, that's the original sin. They are the biggest control factor in the Australian economy. They're the biggest winners of what's happening in Australia. While you're the loser, they're the winners, right? They're the most profitable banks in the world. Everything we do to do with cash and banking is about taking away their power. We need to bring back a public bank, a government bank, a national infrastructure bank so that we can get the banking system to again serve the people. And, is that why they're getting wall-to-wall media and the Citizens Party gets virtually nothing? Gerard Rennick used to get a bit, but he's ever since he's been on the outer for a long time. He doesn't get covered at all on Sky News anymore, right? Even though when he does speak, his quality stands out because he knows his stuff. He knows what he's talking about. He's quite an authority on many things. The viewers, the prospective voters have to ask, is that why we're seeing this difference in the way the media are treating the possible alternatives voters have? If you want to just use the two examples of us versus one nation.
Yeah, interestingly, Keir Starmer has resigned. So that's another breaking prime news. Minister. Okay. So that's the seventh, I think something like the seventh prime minister in 10 years that the UK's had, which shows that this same disease of people not really focusing on what real people believe is really important, I think is a really important message. The other observation I'd make, Robbie, is that there is a difference between social media headlines and, high-level criticisms and throwaway lines that resonate out there and real deep thinking and understanding of the issues that are actually driving to a particular set of policies and outcomes. And the reason that I've done work with you and with Gerard over the years is that both of you and your teams, actually think things through and have a basis of policy driven by fact rather than just opinion or social media clicks. And that is really, really important to me, because as an analyst and as somebody who believes that actually data is important and fact is important, that for me needs to be the cornerstone of any policy formulation. Now, there's other things that you need to overlay on the top of that, but you've got to understand the financial system and the way the financial system works is the bedrock of pretty much everything else that happens in an economy.
Yep.
And if the financial system is rigged, as it is in Australia, as it is in other countries too, to benefit large players, the banks, rather than ordinary people, then that means that the whole of the economic system is rigged, and it means that the political system is rigged, because the banks and the politicians are part of the same team. So yep. This is why it becomes so important, not just to sort of vote against something, but also to understand what the right policy formulations need to be able to take us somewhere different. And my plea of anybody watching this is, you know, when you hear about all of this, the major parties are gone. Yeah. Ask yourself, yeah, but what's going to replace it? What policies are going to be the ones that actually come onto the stage, and who is backing those policies and whose interests are really actually being supported by those policies? Because that is the question that we should be asking of one nation, as of the big parties, because frankly, it's clear to me that there's more going on here than actually a lot of people understand.
Yeah, I think so. And if at a minimum, more people who are hoping that One Nation is the change they want, at least ask pointed questions when they see One Nation behaving strangely. There may still be a chance that the tension between representing the people, which, you know, we know people in One Nation that they would, some of them are quite sincere, you know, they're quite sincere in their own way about it. But what they're running into is this force field of the establishment, and you can see these high profile figures in the establishment gravitating to One Nation. You go, okay, that comes with strings attached. You know, Jared, one thing you can say about Jared Rennick, he's the only person in Australian politics I know, Martin, to turn down money from a billionaire, in this case, Clive Palmer, because it came with strings attached. Clive Palmer offered to fund him in the last election, but it came with strings attached. And Jared said no. And he didn't hate Clive Palmer, right? He just knew that you don't accept support with strings attached. And these billionaires, they always have strings attached. Sam Dastyari, the former Labor fundraiser, I just caught up with an interview he gave the other day, and he decided to be all honest for once. This was back in 2021, and he said, "Don't kid yourself. People say, oh, fundraising is about supporting democracy and stuff." He said, no, these people, it's all pay for play. They are businesses, et cetera, pay money to the political party so they get influence, right? That is how the system works. Our party has a policy of not accepting donations from corporations for that very reason, right? We think you've got to have standards. But anyway, that's the system in Australia. So what people need to do, if you've got all your hopes set on One Nation, at least ask them questions. At least say, Pauline, do you really agree with Gina Rinehart on giving away land, literally giving away land to the state of Israel, right? If you agree, you should say so. Pauline, why did you go to Mar-a-Lago? Pauline, aren't you supposed to be different for the major parties? They both came out and supported this crazy war in Iran, right? Didn't you remember when Donald Trump campaigned against all these forever wars? Why did you turn around and support this one? Right. Why do you support this war? Which, by the way, the other news, Martin, not so much breaking, but you would have seen it. The war's not over. The Iranians walked out. Right. That's not over. In fact, so the price of fuel here today, I saw it. The lowest I saw was $1.47. Right. It's as if we're in paradise here. Like, this is great, this price of fuel. But it's all premised on that everyone assumed in the last few days the war's over. Right. Well, it's not over. And if it just keeps dragging out like this, Trump himself said there's four weeks of reserves left. We are going to start suffering immensely in this country because of that. And she just decided to wholeheartedly support that crap, right? Well, what makes her different from the major parties then? That's what I want to know. What actually makes her different? Because if you fall for the idea that it's this stuff to do with culture, etc., that's the big issue, then sorry, go and vote for her. I don't care. But what you got? But I'm not even going to argue the ideology of that. I just want to appeal to you to understand that's not going to change a damn thing. That's upsetting. That's actually impacting your life. It's not going to change a damn thing. What's going to change it is economic reform, proper economic reform, and that's what the Citizens Party has been focused on all this time. That's what Jared Rennick is focused on. Look at our respective web pages and the the policies there, which we'll put together, etc. But they're all already very similar, including this cornerstone policy of a national bank, right? Because we can rebuild this economy. We've thought it all through. We know the difference between us and Pauline, I'm confident, is if we ever got in the position of being Prime Minister of Australia and you go and sit down with the Treasury the first day, we're not going to let them run rings around us, right, as they do every other politician. No. We're here to change the system, and the first thing we'll probably do is clear out the Treasury, clear out all the neoliberals, right, and say, okay, here's it's a fresh start, boys.
Absolutely. And just on the other little twinkle here, which we should highlight, one of the reasons why the inflation number came down in the last month was because of the government using government money to reduce the excise. And they've now announced they're going to extend that for a further month. Just remember, folks, taxpayer money, your money, is going to do that. And the impact will be inflation will then spike up again when that rolls off. So it hasn't solved anything. The other point, the truth is that it's going to take months and months and months, even if the fighting really stopped and the straits were fully open, for things to get anything close to normal. So we're in this fool's paradise at the moment with everybody assuming that it's going to be fine when it probably won't be. We've got to be really careful and cautious. And then my final observation as we sort of come towards the end here, I think, Robbie, is, you know, people need to be, I think, asking some harder questions of our political parties. And look, I'll invite you and Gerard to jointly come back on the show here at some point, right, down the track. And we'll have a deep dive on some of these policy issues, because there has to be real policy discussion in Australia. And I fear that in the last couple of years in particular, and probably the previous 5 years as well, real policy debate has gone away. It's all about the social media grab. It's all about the misdirection. You know, you got to have the culture wars or whatever it is. But there is a real important platform and opportunity to talk about real policy reform, which is what Australia needs.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And we've got a whole arsenal there that we've prepared for precisely that. We've been thinking this stuff through a long time. You know, we, especially on the economy, especially, you know, we saw 2008 as like a turning point, really, where this is when things started catching up. Reality started catching up with this neoliberal model. And what they've done is paper over the crash ever since. We've been like in this, you know, close to 20-year phase, really, of breakdown. And we've got the solutions to actually get the rebuilding of the economy going. You got to rebuild it. You got to invest in it and rebuild it. We've got the infrastructure ideas. We've got the mechanisms for how we'd fund it with the national bank policy, etc. We've got how to reform the tax system. Jared's an expert on tax, etc. Do those things to actually start making the economy. That's what we're going to. The name we're trying to get approval for is Australian People's Party, because that's what it comes down to. You know, Abraham Lincoln gave one of the most profound speeches in all of political Western political history, at least. And his description of what government should be, you can't express it more profoundly than that: of, for, and by the people. Right? That is what we have to bring, because we've lost it. We've got to bring it back. And we're not just saying it; we're saying, here's how that would work in practice. Go look at our policies on our website.
Yeah, well, you may remember some time ago there was a channel called In the Interests of the People, right?
That's right. And
I picked that name deliberately because to me, the center of gravity of the political process and the political system is the interests of the people, not big power, money power, not the big banks, not the US, not China. It's in the interests of the people, and that's what we need. Robbie?
People.
Very much enjoy this conversation. We're going to have, I think, more discussions ahead on this very important topic, and I look forward to see how this develops.
Me too, Martin. Watch this space.
Thank you. Take care.